Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
This podcast was recorded on Wurundjeri land. We pay our respect to their elders past and present and to the traditional owners of the game Mangrook, without which our game wouldn't exist. This is Footy Actually, brought to you by Play On Radio.
Recording in progress.
Hello and welcome to Footy Actually. I'm completely forgotten how to do this intro bit.
Leave that in.
Hello and welcome to Footy Actually, the alternative listening footy podcast for diehard fans. My name is Kel Rowe, and I'm here with my co-host, Gemma Bastiani, AFLW analyst extraordinaire. And we're back from our self-imposed benching. Round 9 did not disappoint. Records are falling, milestones are being made, and the race to the finals is well and truly on. We saw 3 players hit 50 AFLW games, and Melbourne claimed the highest ever score record, freshly minted by the Lions in round 8. So it's up for grabs, people. And also up for grabs is 6th place on the ladder. How did you find this weekend, Gem?
It was truly so fun. Also, I should flag, we've had a break because I overextended myself. So I'm sorry, everyone.
No, we both did.
But Kel very kindly agreed to take a break with me and has been doing all the work on social media. So if everyone thank Kel for that, please.
Thanks, guys. So footy finally returned to Moorabbin on Saturday afternoon for our first game of the weekend. The Saints hosted the Cats in front of the brand new grandstand, which I sat in, part of the Danny Frawley Centre. Both sides were coming off round 8 wins, and both sides are really keen to string back-to-back victories together. The wind was troublesome, kept accuracy in the score low, but ultimately the Saints prevailed, winning by 9 points. I found this one a little bit of a weird game, almost like they didn't realise they were playing for points until maybe the last 10 minutes. But I was there on the ground, so it might have looked different on the broadcast. What did you think, Jem?
Coming into this game, the big thing was the Saints were the worst clearance team in the competition, averaging 17.8 clearances a game, whereas Geelong were actually quite competent in that stat. You know, Amy McDonald, those sorts of players are quite good at winning those clearances. So Geelong's chance to take advantage of this game was at stoppages, at the source. Interestingly, the Saints came in and that was what they focused on beating Geelong at.
Yeah.
And Tilly Lucas-Rhodes came out and had 12 clearances, which is the equal second most in competition history. Obviously, the record is held by Jasmine Garner, who had 13 against the Dogs last year. But it seemed like the Saints came in to take that away from Geelong. And as soon as they took that away, Geelong found it really hard to get going. And then once they did, they were incredibly inaccurate in front of goal. So it's worth remembering that a couple of weeks ago down at Trevor Barker Beach Oval, the Saints, their defense and, you know, the wind and that sort of stuff kept Brisbane to 11 consecutive behinds before they kicked their first goal. Geelong was kept to 9 consecutive behinds. So it is...
It's windy in the southeast.
Well, the wind is a factor. I think, you know, inaccuracy from that team attempting to kick goals is a factor, but I think also the way the Saints have defended have forced some of those shots into awkward positions or pressured. So I think some of that credit needs to go to the Saints as well, despite all those other factors.
Yeah, definitely. Most of the shots from goal were sitting in that really tight corner of the pocket in front of the grandstand. and the wind was blowing across the oval, so that makes sense.
But yeah, I think good for the Saints. It was their first ever consecutive wins. I don't know that you can take a lot out of the Saints season this year, because missing key players have kind of been making up a team on the run.
New coach.
Have come close in some games, have been blown out in some games. Because they've been so inconsistent on field and off field. I don't know how much you can understand what the Saints are about this year.
Maybe we'll see a better run from them next year. Who will you play on performance for the round?
We should say next season, because we don't know when the season's going to start. That's it may true. Not be next year, maybe this year. My play on performer votes. 3 to Tilly Lucas Wright, as I said, 12 clearances, which is massive. She had 22 disposals, laid 10 tackles, and had 7 inside 50s. So she was doing so much work, and Geelong
left her in space.
She found so much space all the time. If there was someone running with her, they weren't doing a very good job. And if there wasn't, then that's not a good choice from the coach's box either. So I don't know what decision was made there, but it wasn't a good one. I've given 2 to Bianca Jacobson because she's having a really good season in that defensive line. She had 17 touches, 6 intercepts, 376 meters gained. But the thing that I really like about the way Jacobson works in that back line, she has a really good awareness of the tempo of the game.
Mm.
And when she's able to slow it down and calm things down when she wins the ball, or she knows when to go quickly. And I think that's such an asset that we don't recognize enough, is that tempo awareness. And the best teams are good at it, and the poorest teams really struggle to do it as a collective. Jacobson is leading the way for the Saints. And then 1 to Nina Morrison. She had 18 touches, 6 inside 50s, 464 meters gained. She works incredibly hard. She just didn't have enough support around her.
Yeah, yeah. I did think that she had an excellent game. And it's just so great to watch her running around with that amazing mullet. It's just one day there will be a beautiful vintage footy card of that, I'm sure. It was amazing. I will make it.
Yeah, do it. You're the graphic designer.
Yeah. Maybe I'll put that on the socials this week. I've agreed with you for the first two. Tilly Lucas-Rod's having a season. It's really amazing to see what has happened with her game since stepping up into that midfield role. I'm convinced that she will be a leader at this club for a long time to come.
Yeah.
I also agree with you on BJ. I love the way she appears to hunt the ball, even in her defensive actions. It's just really imposing as a player. And I would imagine as an opposition, that's quite intimidating. But she's an excellent and safe pair of hands down the back. I'm really enjoying watching her season. And I've given 1 to Maddie McMahon, probably for similar reasons. She did a really great job on the Cats defensive line. She has been all season. She's just a real rock for them back there. She had 16 disposals, 5 marks and 2 tackles, which is pretty great.
Yeah.
Saturday's game between the Giants and Richmond, it was one for pride. Neither side is going to make finals this year. The Tigers burst out of the gates and kicked 5 unanswered goals by the first break, which I believe is the highest amount of goals they've kicked in a first term.
Yeah, Richmond's highest ever first quarter score. It's also the 5th time that a team has kicked 5 or more goals in the first quarter in AFLW history.
We love a start like that. It was amazing. The Giants fought back and the game became an absolutely contested tussle, with the final quarter seeing Staunton kick 3 goals to close the gap. In the end, it wasn't quite enough though, with the Tigers claiming an 8-point victory.
The biggest thing we learned from this game is how important Wakefield and Levy are to Richmond.
Absolutely.
So Wakefield, she plays a great role in the forward line, not only as an incredible contested mark, a big body that you need to be really aware of, a really reliable shot on goal, but also the pressure that she takes off Katie Brennan is immense. So that's the big thing. And then Levy, the way Levy's able to hit up targets going inside 50 is so, so valuable. So those were the two things that I think we learned from this. But then also, I've talked multiple times this year about when the Tigers have not performed well, it's largely been off the back of a lack of support in the midfield for Monconti. Obviously, Ellie McKenzie missed some of the season and it's taken a little bit to get into it, but there needed to be other people to support Conti. And in this game, we saw Sarah Hosking take that over and had an incredible game. For the Giants, I think the issue for them, and again, I've said it multiple times on the pod, is they don't try new things until they are forced to try new things.
Mm.
And they're so predictable when they go into a game with just what they're used to doing all the time. So when, and I hate that concussion was an issue in this game, Elise Parker copped a concussion for a hit that Jess Hosking has received a 2-game suspension for. But she missed 3 quarters of this game. And after that first quarter, the Giants had to get more creative because they didn't have Parker to lean on in that midfield. And as soon as they're forced to change those things, they become a much more difficult team to anticipate and they work more creatively. And they got way back into this game and it was a tussle for the rest of the game. So that's the frustrating thing about the Giants is because the answer feels like it's right there, but they're not willing to do those things until they absolutely have to. And that's my question for them is why aren't you willing to be creative?
Yeah, they seem really risk adverse on that front, even when they've got proven evidence that it works. On Levy, I'm just really impressed with her efforts. I think her awareness with the ball is phenomenal. And that goal that she got right on the siren at quarter time was pretty excellent. Who were you playing on performance for this round?
So I mentioned her earlier, Sarah Hosking gets my 3. She had a personal best 23 disposals. She had a game high 8 clearances and a game high 7 tackles. So she was in amongst it all game and I just loved it. And she was wearing some unpleasant tape across her face because of a cut below her eye for the game as well. Didn't bother her. She got in.
It was awful.
I feel like I need to change my 1 and my 2. So I'm going to give 2 to Beck Miller. In that first quarter, especially her presence in that defensive line, her positioning, ability to read the ball, just incredible. She had 12 disposals, took 7 marks and had 7 intercepts, but I think she's having just a phenomenal year. And it's such a joy to watch players kind of grow into the skills that they have with able to put those things together more and more year on year. And Beck Miller has absolutely been that over the past couple of years. Now, I've given the 1 to Mon Conti, 26 touches, 6 tackles, 3 inside 50s. She is a better player when she has support.
Yeah, full stop. I have given Mon 3. She is at the centre of that side. Her performance week after week is the kind that carries the team when they're a bit flat. So it's really good to see her in a situation, like you said, where she's got everyone else up and around her, not just doing the work herself. I've given 2 votes to Sarah Hosking. She's such a pressure player and she's so hard on the ball. And that cut under her eye was just so gross. So 2 points for that at the very least.
2 points for getting a cut on your face.
2 points for being tough. If another really solid performer in the Tigers side. And I've given 1 to Beck Beeson, who we missed out on seeing for a good chunk of the season due to an ankle injury, but obviously had a huge game. She's had 31 disposals and 2 tackles. And it's kind of what's been missing, I think, with Eva and Parker in the Giants midfield when they have kind of gone the old faithful Giants side. Not having Beeson in there as kind of that outside run, I think, has really hurt them. So it's good to see her back in the side.
Yes. We love fit players.
And wings too. We love wings.
Wingers.
Then we get to the first of our doubleheader at Optus Stadium.
I just realised.
Jem's face just lit up.
It seemed like such a fake laugh, but I was writing something down and didn't realise that that's what we were up to.
Well, guess what? Get ready. Strap yourself in. I think the first thing to mention for this game, and obviously the one that followed it, is that we were at Optus Stadium. So here we had the first opportunity to see some games without any annoying conditions, particularly this game between Freo and Melbourne. Unfortunately, things couldn't have gone more worse for Freo coming into this game. They were already down in their lineup thanks to some injury and COVID outs, but then like an hour before the game, they had to retire 3 more to safety protocols. So that was the Antonios and Emma O'Driscoll, obviously really key players for their side, on top of the losses that they already had. In contrast to this, Melbourne were at their very best and probably took great advantage of this, but they were dominating possession. They were working the ball seamlessly up and down the ground. It's just a beautiful thing to watch. And they kicked the highest score ever in AFLW history. Freo fought hard, led by Hayley Miller as always, but it just wasn't enough to disrupt that beautiful team performance on the excellent deck that is Optus Stadium.
Where do I start? Ugh. First of all, I feel awful for Freo because they just couldn't catch a break.
No.
Bowers still out with that knee, Rue out with the hamstring, Cuthbertson would be the one to take Harris, you would think. She's not in the side, so Emma O'Driscoll gets that matchup. Emma O'Driscoll are late out, so then you have to move someone else onto Harris, and it's like Anya Tai got moved into defense to play on her, and then Mim Strong spent some time on her.
Mm.
So it was just they couldn't get any sort of win. I think that there's a couple of positives that Freo can look at, though, in terms of Hayley Miller still had a phenomenal performance. She did everything she could to get everyone on her back and get it right. It was just unfortunate they were up against Melbourne with no injuries. And then Michaela Weston, who was a top-up player that they brought in at the very last moment, arrived at the ground, I think, 20 minutes before the match started. Her pressure and speed was really, really good, especially in that first quarter. So those are probably the positives you take out if you're a Freo fan or someone from Freo. From Melbourne's perspective, though, the way they run in support of one another, I think, is really underrated. And I think it really came out because they were able to play that clean disposal game, thanks to it being at a protected venue. So I think I tweeted during the game that handball from Tyler Hanks is the best thing I've ever seen or something, because multiple times, just the way she's able to get those balls out in front of a running teammate who doesn't have to break stride, who can then deliver the ball really quickly inside 50. I think that is like immaculate football, isn't it? And Melbourne was able to do that time and time again because, again, all of a sudden, this team that is so used to playing in a gale force wind is playing in perfect conditions for the first time. And we could use that term, perfect conditions, for this game. And everything just clicked for them off the back of that. Obviously, Daisy Pierce in the forward line kicked 5 goals. But the one thing that really brought a lot of people a lot of joy, if they had listened to my commentary of the Melbourne North Melbourne game the previous week, was I had my fun stat that Karen Paxman had never kicked multiple goals in a game, but had kicked the most goals of anyone who had never kicked multiple goals in a game. And my good co-commentator, Nathan Burke, decided to tell Karen that I'd said that. And it was almost like she was like, all right, well, let's break that habit. And went and kicked 2 goals in this game. So good on you, Paxi. My record is ruined. I need to come up with another fun fact for my next commentary gig, which is on Saturday. But yeah, it was just the perfect game for Melbourne, really, I think, in the end. Lily Mithen, give her a shout out. She's had a really good month and probably doesn't get mentioned very much. Alyssa Bannon had a really good first half. There were a lot of players who just rose to the challenge of, all right, this is our chance to pile on a bit of percentage to potentially get that top spot on the ladder, get a home grand final if they make it through. Here's the chance, and they took that on.
It was pretty impressive to watch. And you're right, the way that they play for each other, obviously it produces really good footy, but you can see the joy it brings them all playing together, which is, I think, something really special. Who are you playing on performance for the round?
Well, I mean, we can't go past Daisy Pierce
yep.
for the 3. 5 goals, 17 disposals, 5 marks. She also probably could have kicked a couple more goals, but was bringing her teammates into the game, just like Alyssa Bannon did with her as well, getting that handball over top for 1 of her goals. So that was just, I think, a really good captain's performance. And I can't help but think back to round 2 where Melbourne played Richmond at Punt Road, and Alyssa Bannon kicked that goal of the year contender where she streamed down the wing, took 4 bounces or whatever. And everyone made the joke that she had to kick the goal because she burned her captain who was in the goal square. But if you actually watch the footage, Daisy is telling her to go for goal. She's being that leader, giving that responsibility to her younger teammates. And I think that's something we really saw in this game as well. Quite often she's the one telling them to go for goal. Even if she's in a better position, she wants to give them that confidence, and that can't be measured, that impact she has in that way. To Lily Mith, just said she had a game high 24 disposals. She had 4 inside 50s. Importantly, Lily Mithen had 10 score involvements, but did not have a score of her own. So she was setting up teammates all day. There were 4 Demons who had 10 or more score involvements. She was the only one who didn't kick her own score for the day. Taylor Harris had 10 and she kicked 3 goals. Kate Hoare had 10 or 12 and she kicked 3 goals. And Daisy had 12 and kicked 5 goals. So Lily Mithen was doing it all for her teammates to get that reward. So shout out to Lily Mithen. And then 1 to Tyler Hanks. Again, I've talked about her handballs out of it, those contests. I know everyone thinks that I'm a little bit out of my mind because I keep talking about these handballs, but please go back and watch them and understand how good they are. 21 disposals at 71.4% efficiency, 5 inside 50s and 5 marks for Tyler Hanks.
Amazing. I've agreed with you there on the first two. Daisy Pierce, phenomenal game. I did also think, unrelated to her performance, but I did also think she said something in the beginning of the season about how whoever comes out at the end of this as the Premiers is probably the team that's going to field, you know, a team at the right time. And I really feel like that might be her team. It's really coming together for them, and they've kind of navigated this really difficult season together so well with her at the helm. So I think, you know, not only her performance in that game, but also just across the board, she's pretty fantastic. I've given 2 points to Lily Mithen. Like you said, she's just the epitome of a team player. She's constantly in there. You can see when her teammates do well, she's probably like the first person to get up and around them. Oodles of energy, and to have that much involvement in scoring and not actually kick a goal yourself is pretty incredible. Could that be your next fun fact? Is that the highest scoring?
Well, I've it may just be the most score involvements without your own score. I think the previous was 9 for Anne Hatchard. Oh. I will look that up after this podcast and tweet it.
Excellent. You're welcome. and I've given 1 point to Dana East, obviously the rising star nominee this week. Huge performance in the face of, well, let's face it, a pretty dominant Melbourne side. She had 18 disposals and 7 tackles and is going to be a force in that team in this competition for years to come, I'd say.
I really, really like Dana East. I'm very happy that she finally got a rising star nomination.
Yeah, we love to see it.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
So then we moved on to our second game of the Optus Stadium doubleheader, a true doubleheader, as it were. So the Dogs flew west this week and they continued to keep their chances of finals alive, downing the luckless Eagle side in a dominant performance to claim a 60-point win. Doggies had 6 individual goal kickers and continued to entertain with their brand of footy. I just love watching the play. It's really fun. I saw that Nathan Burke was interviewed, I think, at the halftime break, and he mentioned that, you know, obviously he was pleased with what his side had done, but he challenged them to see if they could be ruthless. And I'm pretty sure they did that because they kicked 7 more goals in the second half.
He also said he's, as a coach, he's never been in that position before.
That's wild.
Which I think was really interesting. The Dogs needed a percentage boost if they were to stay a chance for finals, and they did that in this game.
Did they get like 20% or something off the back of that game?
Yeah, it was pretty massive because they were able to keep the Eagles to such a low score. So conceding very few points helps your percentage more than anything.
Yeah.
So the fact they're able to do that. I just love how the Bulldogs backline works, the way they position themselves. I think they're just really clever. And the Eagles, they're a side who do like to get the ball out the back, use speed in attack because they don't really have a big key marking forward. But when they come up against a team that has a defensive line that is really disciplined and doesn't get sucked up into the play, they really struggle to score. And the Bulldogs clearly were aware of that. Mel Hickey's their defensive coach, and she's a really astute football mind. So prepared for that, didn't let those quick, easy ones over the back. Amy Schmidt was kept quiet off the back of that. Neve Kelly was kept quiet. Katie Lynch, I think, had her best game of her career. I think is Lizzie Grant grows as a defender every single week. She was brought into that backline this year because they were a bit thin in terms of injury and stuff like that. And she's just growing every single week in that role. And I think we've really unearthed, or the Dogs have really unearthed, an exciting long-term key position player for themselves who is really athletic. So, yeah, the young Dogs love it. Nell Morris-Dalton got a Rising Star nomination. But then you add on to it Bonnie Toogood, who has continued to have a really good season. Or, you know, Kirsty Lamb, who, she's not all Australian, then questions should be asked, all that sort of stuff. It's just really exciting. And I think the Eagles are just limping to the line at this point.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I did think the other week when I was watching them, one positive that I think for them this season is that inclusion of Amy Schmidt. Obviously, we've talked a bit about, you know, their ability to score in the past and things like that. And I think she's really flourished in that role with West Coast.
And we had a conversation pre-season.
Yeah.
And I said, I don't know how much she's going to bring to them, because you were really excited about her and I was a bit tentative.
Mm.
I concede that I was incorrect.
Yes.
Her awareness, how clean she is at ground level, goal sense is really good, and they needed that. She just needs more opportunities. They just don't get it in for her to have those opportunities enough. But, yeah, I can see she's been a wonderful, wonderful pickup for them.
Yeah, so hopefully they'll be able to build on that and build that connection up to her for the next season. We'll see what happens.
Well, she needs a big, powerful forward to stand at the feet of, and they don't have that.
Mm. Well, it's trade season. Who knows?
God, no one knows what's going to happen this offseason.
We'll talk about that another time. Who will you play on performer votes?
So again, I've given 3 to Kirsty Lamb. She had 20 disposals, a game high 8 inside 50s, and I think the inside 50 count is really valuable. She just works so hard, pushes her body to the absolute limit for her team. And I can't help but respect her and the way she goes about her footy.
There's a great photo of Celine Moody coming to her aid. Very good.
Very funny. 2 to Ellie Blackburn. She had a game-high 23 disposals, 5 score involvements. Ellie Blackburn played another very, very good game. And then 1 to Katie Lynch. As I said, I think it was her career best game. She had a personal best 18 disposals.
Mm.
She had 9 intercepts, 8 marks. The biggest thing, though, is with those 18 disposals, she used them at 88.9% efficiency. So she is helping set up the team out of defence really well with her clean ball use. So shout out to Katie Lynch.
Oh, that's an amazing rebound out of defence. I have agreed with you on the top one. I've given 3 votes to Kirsty Lamb. I think you're right. If she's not in that All-Australian side, we need to have a riot.
We riot in the streets. Yeah.
I gave 2 votes to Brooke Lachlan. Obviously, we haven't seen a lot of Brooke this season because of COVID.
And concussion.
So I was really pleased to see her at the best that I've seen her all season. She had 15 disposals, 5 tackles, and she kicked 3 goals, and they were bloody great goals. So great to see her out there performing. And I've given 1 vote to Ellie Blackburn. Obviously, as you said, she had the game-high disposals and continues to just be one of the most exemplary captains of the season, I'd say.
Fun fact about Brooke Lachlan.
Mm-hmm.
She has kicked 18 goals in her career. More than half of those goals have come in 2 games.
That is wild.
7 and 3 is 10, obviously.
Yeah.
Basic maths.
Yeah.
Come in 2 games. Yeah.
Amazing. Ah, may she continue to be a ball magnet. Then we head, of course, to Sunday. Due to extreme flooding in Queensland, the originally slated Lions home game at Maroochydore against the Kangaroos was moved to somewhat neutral territory, at Witten Oval. It was a pretty sort of soggy early afternoon, to be honest. Not any rain on the radar, but just wet air, which is probably more annoying. So the conditions weren't amazing.
Wet air.
I wasn't going to say the M word. Nobody likes that. The Roos struck first through Jazzy Garner, but then the Lions booted the next 3 to set up a nice lead and cruised basically to the final siren with a 36-point victory. Emily Bates and Ali Anderson, of course, celebrated their significant 50-game milestone, and the Lions continue to show their case for claiming back-to-back premierships.
Yes, I agree with what you just said. I think North really lack an awareness in game of how to change momentum in their favour. We saw it last week against Melbourne. They had territory control late in the game, but continued to put it to the same spot, just, you know, probably 40 metres out from goal on the boundary. That just kept coming back out. They had no awareness to try something different. And I think that showed again in this game. They didn't try to change anything. They just let Brisbane do what they wanted once they tried to get in the forward half. Which I think is quite odd. I think it was, I'm trying to phrase this in a way that isn't harsh, but it's probably going to come across as harsh. But Brisbane, we know, is a team first team.
Yeah,
there are no stars in that team, even though, you know, an Emily Bates is a star of the competition, that sort of stuff. But once they're on the field, everyone does everything. But I don't know that that's the case for North. And I don't know that their lower end, so probably their bottom five players that are out on the field, are as good as Brisbane's bottom five players. And I think that's what continues to hold North back. They have all these stars that when everything's clicking, it's amazing.
Yeah.
But I think once they really rely on their depth, they do get found out a little bit, because that in-game awareness, that sort of stuff, isn't coming through from everyone on the field. And whereas Brisbane, everything is about everyone all the time. And famously, I wrote an article about this last week. So, Kel, if you want to link that in the show notes,
I would be honoured.
Brisbane laid 21 more tackles than North did. Anderson and Bates, who, again, arguably the stars of that team, playing in their 50th game, they each had 11 tackles in their 50th game. They're willing to do the dirty work as much as they are willing to be the stars of that team. So I think that is really indicative. And then also the one percenters, Brisbane had 36 to North Melbourne 17. So again, this game was won in those smaller moments where Brisbane was willing to do it, and I don't think North was.
Yeah, it was an interesting game. I caught the second half on the boundary, and you're right, it just sort of seemed to be kind of putting it in the same place, not getting a good result, and then trying exactly the same thing again. Quite frustrating for the Roos, but obviously within their power to do something different, I guess. Who are you playing on performers for this round?
So I'm obsessed with Sophie Conway.
Mm-hmm.
We know that I love wingers, and she's one of the best in the comp. She had 5 inside 50s, 5 intercepts, 349 metres gained, and kicked 2 goals. So 5 intercepts, so she's defending, 5 inside 50s, she's turning that into attack, kicking her own goals and also setting up her teammates. I just think she's an incredible player, and I'm really excited to be interviewing her in 45 minutes. So look out for that on the AFL Women's website. I've given 2 to Ash Riddell because, despite everything, I think she is the one who is probably one of their stars, who does everything, is willing to do everything. She had another 28 touches, took 6 marks, laid 6 tackles, 445 metres gained. She never ever gives up. She never hangs her head, anything. I just really respect Ashradell. And then I've given the 1 to Emily Bates in her 50th game. 16 disposals, 11 tackles, which is equal most on field, as I said earlier, and 3 inside 50s. I think Emily Bates is probably a good shout for the AFLW MVP award this year.
Yeah, well, I've agreed with you with all those names, just in a slightly different order. As per the usual, I've given Emily Bates 3. I've given Sophie Conway 2. She just runs and runs and runs and runs. It's incredible. And I've given 1 to Ash Riddell, who was obviously trying to turn the tide for the Roos, and it just didn't happen, unfortunately. And our second game on Sunday was down at Nord Oval. The Crows took on the Pies in the Battle of the Birds, and the visitors gave Adelaide quite a scare. They nearly took the win in the final quarter. Ebony Marinoff, of course, celebrated her 50-game milestone, and Erin Phillips was back in the side after a bit of a knee scare. She definitely made her presence known. And newly minted rising star Eliza James kicked things off for the Pies. It was pretty exciting game. Despite the highly contested ball game and a surging Collingwood side, the Crows have managed to hold on for a two-point win.
Yeah, I think the thing we learned from this is, and arguably we learned it from the Dogs game as well, Adelaide is beatable if you can match them for pressure and win the ball out of the middle.
Mm.
So I think those are the two things that are key to matching Adelaide. The Crows did have the early control, but once Collingwood became a bit more decisive in their pressure, so it's not all about tackle count, so it's about closing space. It's about also laying tackles, but then just that perceived pressure that they're able to put on by not allowing that space. You know, typically we see Adelaide against poorer teams able to just find options and use that uncontested kick mark game all around the field. As soon as Collingwood stopped that from happening from the second quarter onward, it was a totally different game. And they also were able to break free of Adelaide's territory squeeze because they didn't allow Adelaide to possess the ball as much. So Adelaide can't do that territory game if they're not controlling the ball. And as soon as you stop them from controlling the ball, you can get good looks inside 50. So the result of this game was actually perfect in the context of last round drama toward finals. Adelaide win but lose 19 percentage points. The top two is still very much alive. Collingwood lose, but only by 2 points, which means they're still in the top six, but they've lost enough percentage that they may drop out if they lose next week. There's like so many moving parts still
so
there
much drama.
because of that narrow margin. So this game couldn't have been more perfect.
Love it. Who are you playing performer votes?
Ruby Schleicher gets three. She had a personal best 31 disposals, 413 meters gained, 5 tackles and 11 intercepts. She's found that running, attacking game a lot more in the past couple of games, and I'm loving seeing it again. 2 to Ebony Mariner for gaining her 50th game. She had 24 touches at 75% efficiency. That's really good for Eb. She doesn't normally go that high. 7 clearances, 6 inside 50s, 448 meters gained. So very attacking off the back of those clearances, which I love. And then I've given 1 to Ash Woodland. She kicked another 2 goals, took 3 marks. She wasn't super active in the game, but she was very clearly a concern for the defense and kept them on their toes. And I just love it when a forward is able to really unsettle a defense the way that she did.
Yeah, absolutely. I have given Ebony Marinoff 3 in her 50 games. Like you said, she's just having a really fantastic season. I've given her partner in crime 2, Anne Hatchard. The two of those players combining on field is obviously producing some pretty amazing football. There was a little concern pregame around Hatchard's fitness. Commentators spotted in the warm-up she'd like was a bit proppy with her back or something, but clearly didn't affect her game too much in the end. And 1 vote to Ruby Schleicher, who was just incredible and has been playing, like you said, a really incredible role for Collingwood off that halfback line. She's really stood up in the absence of, you know, those players who've succumbed to injury and aren't on field this year. So it's pretty great to see. And then we got to our last game of the weekend. For a fairly compact fixture this weekend, it still felt like an inordinate amount of games in comparison to a few weeks back where we've had, you know, playing catch-up games. The footy really went all weekend.
That's because it was over. We had 4 games on Saturday and 3 on Sunday.
Yeah.
Everything was packed into 2 days.
Really intense.
Men's preseason matches are on, yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's no good. But the Blues obviously rounded out the weekend. They hosted the Suns for their final home game of the season, and their late run of form continued, riding over the Gold Coast and snuffing out any chance of finals for that visiting side. Mim Hill continues to star, and the return of some key players from injury for the Blues has seen their ball movement improve significantly. Conversely, the loss would have been pretty disappointing for the Suns, who's just had a real breakout season, really turning things around after finishing on the bottom of the ladder last year, which I think, you know, at the start of the season was quite surprising, but it's transitioned into just being thoroughly entertaining football to watch.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think for Carlton, everyone is talking about their fixture early in the season was hard and this and that, which is not untrue, but also they have changed their mindset in the past 3 weeks.
Hmm.
They've decided that they're going to apply pressure up the field, especially inside 50. They're going to be a hard team to get rebounds against, and that has completely changed their game. If they had done that, I mean, we saw it in the first quarter, even half, against Fremantle.
Yeah.
That pressure against good teams keeps you in the game. And they just weren't doing it earlier in the year. But the fact that they've been able to do it the past 2 weeks and they've copped three wins, three pretty solid wins as well, It's off the back of that willingness to apply pressure higher up the field, defend higher up the field so that their back line isn't constantly being bombarded and caught out. So against Gold Coast, they had 5 more tackles and just generally, and it's 6 more tackles inside 50. But importantly, they are plus 27 for tackles inside 50 over the last 3 weeks. Plus 27 is massive. They are pressuring to keep that territory, keep the ball inside 50, create repeat opportunities. And that is what has changed the game for them. And it's all mindset. The players that have been on the field from round one had the potential to do that. They just haven't been.
Yeah.
And now that they are, they're a much better side.
Yeah, agreed. It's really good to see.
Sorry, that was very like aggressive ranty. I didn't mean it that way. But it's just, if it's frustrating that they could have done this earlier.
As a Carlton supporter, like I agree with everything you say. And it is incredibly frustrating to, you know, not really kind of realize that ability and that mindset until this late in the season. Hopefully we can just keep working towards that being from day dot. Who will you play on performance for the round?
So I have chosen Mua Lalawifi for 3 votes.
Amazing.
Her positioning, I think, is just really, really smart. She had 10 intercepts, 16 disposals at 75% efficiency. But again, I just love her awareness, her game sense of how to position herself.
Mm-hmm.
And she works beautifully with Gab Pound and Karen Harrington in that back line as well. So loved her game. 2 to Mimi Hill. Again, 25 disposals. That is her average this season, which is completely wild. 423 metres gained, 3 score involvements. I think she is, you said earlier, key players coming back has really helped their ball movement, specifically her. And then Courtney Jones gets my one because I think her forward pressure was really, really good.
Yeah.
13 disposals, kicked a goal, laid 4 tackles, which I think is really important. So that's why she gets my one.
I'm pretty sure she laid a tackle on someone inside their 50 and that's what resulted in the goal too, wasn't it? Was it a turnover?
Yeah. And then she took that mark with her legs.
Yeah. Creative. It's great.
Exactly.
I've given 3 votes to Mim Hill. I was saying to someone after that game that it is like watching a ribbon in the wind, the way that she moves. It is just, and I know that sounds absurdly like it's a weird metaphor to apply, but if you watch her play football, she's just so silky through traffic. It is just a joy to watch. And I look forward to watching that for many, many more years. I've given 2 to Bree Moody. I think her season has been absolutely phenomenal and she's been really consistent across the board. But there was a couple of moments in that game that I just really loved, particularly where she got the ball on the wing and she went for a run, slipped over, got up, managed to evade the same defender, take a bounce, come through and boot it perfectly into the goal square. She's got a booming kick. So I just really enjoyed that run, carry and delivery. I think I'm always in awe of the taller, you know, like the rucks and that, being able to perform as an extra midfielder. And I think
Lauren Pierce
and Bree Moody are 2 people in particular in this competition who have the ability to do that and make it look effortless. Like if you're a big body and you're getting down to the ground to gather a ball, if you make that look effortless, like, hats off, that's impressive. And I've given the one to Ali Drennan. As per the usual, she was sort of everywhere in her defence. Her pressure around the contest is amazing. I really enjoy watching her play football and I hope we get to see more of her. I'm not ready for Ali to finish. I don't think Ali's ready to finish either, which is great.
You retiring her on this podcast right now?
Gosh, no. I'm saying that she should definitely not. Her football is incredible.
Good.
So that was the end of the round. Obviously, we've got one more round to come, round 10.
Yep.
What's your game to watch?
I don't have the sheet up. I think I chose Richmond-Collingwood. Did I choose Richmond-Collingwood?
Yeah, you absolutely did.
Collingwood-Richmond, I should say, because it's Collingwood's home game. I'm commentating this one for the ABC, so everyone tune in. I think this one has such implications for finals because Richmond are in fairly good nick.
Mm-hmm.
If they can beat Collingwood, that door is open on Sunday for the Dogs to sneak in.
Oh, yeah.
And I just love the idea of that being live until the last moment. So that's why I've chosen this game.
Well, funny you should say that, because I don't know if you remember, but when we were doing the sort of season previews at end of last year, start of this year, I'm pretty sure that I said that there would be a couple of teams, like, say, St Kilda and Richmond, who wouldn't necessarily make finals, but they would cause trouble for other sides trying to solidify their finals position. And this is it. Mm-hmm. I'm so excited.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
To your point too, my game to pick is the Dogs v Lions, because obviously that's pretty important in the scheme of that final six. Lions are obviously in pretty top form. I don't think they've really not been. It's amazing. But I have quite a lot of hope for the Dogs off the back of that massive win against, and it wasn't massive in scoreline, but obviously massive effortful win against Adelaide. We know that they can match it with top teams. They play strategically. They've got a really solid back line and they're looking in pretty good shape. I mean, they had a rough start to the season. So I feel like this is going to be a really exciting matchup. The Lions will probably be put to their paces, and likewise, because we know that they're also a really incredible side. So I think those two fantastic games to watch across the round.
Yes, I'm going to be heading up to Ballarat for that game. So I'll wave to people if they see me. That sounded really obnoxious. Yeah,
like the Queen.
If you see me, wave, please, because I will wave back.
I'm going to the Collingwood Richmond game. I'll wave at you.
As I said, I'll be there. But listen on ABC, everyone.
Excellent. Excellent. On that note, let's talk about tipping for round 10. On Friday night, we've got the Cats hosting the Giants down at GMHBA Stadium. Who have you got for that, Jen?
I'm going to go Geelong because I think they're a better team than what the performance last week showed. But I'm going to go for them by 2 points.
I'm also going to back the Cats in. I'm going to back them in by a goal.
Okay. I'm writing this down.
Excellent. Then the first game on Saturday, obviously we've talked about it in our games to watch, is Collingwood hosting Richmond down at Victoria Park. I'm going to go first because you might think I'm copying you. Look, this is a chaos tip, but I would love Richmond to get up. Richmond by 2 points.
I also would love Richmond to get up because, again, I want those finals to be live until the very last moment. I will still have to tip Collingwood, though, but I'm going to tip them by one. I'm going to do lots of narrow margins this week.
I think so. Maybe not so much for the next game.
Yeah, no.
Sorry, Eagles. Kangaroos are hosting the West Coast Eagles at Arden Street. I'm going to back in the Roos by 18.
I'll go Roos as well. I think it's going to be 30 points.
Ooh. Actually, that's true. Dana Hooker with a shoulder injury might be a big blight for the Eagles.
Oh, but you can't change it now, though, because I've already written it in.
Oh, no, I won't change it. I'm still backing in the Roos. I'm not an idiot. we have the Melbourne Demons hosting the Blues out at Casey Fields. Obviously, this one's a pretty important one for Melbourne to get even more percentage boosts, chance of having a home grand final and snagging one of those top two spots. From what I understand, it's all down to the numbers at this point. So they really have to make a good show of it. I would love to pick Carlton because I support them, but I'm going to go the D's by a lot, maybe 30.
30?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm tipping Melbourne by 25.
Nice.
Yeah.
I also think this might commence my D's finals bandwagon participation.
Welcome aboard.
I'll be here for the duration of the campaign.
For a month, yeah.
Our first game on Sunday, St Kilda are hosting the Adelaide Crows down at RSCA Stadium. You can go first on this one, Jim.
Adelaide by 40. I think Adelaide's going to end up top of the ladder because I think Adelaide's going to win by enough that Melbourne can't make up that percentage.
Yep. Yep, I'm inclined to agree with you. I would love to back in the Saints on this one, but my tipping status probably needs to be redeemed. So Adelaide by 35.
Could you imagine if the Saints won this? That would be completely wild.
I mean, I would probably have to eat my hat or some form of punishment
for doubting them.
They're not after, going to though.
Yeah. No. Our second game on Sunday is the Western Bulldogs hosting the Lions out in Ballarat at Mars Stadium. Another one of our games to watch for the round. I'm going to back in the Dogs by two.
Dogs by two? That's a big call.
Yep.
I'm going Brisbane by 15.
Ooh, okay. Nice. All right. And then our final game for Sunday and final for the home and away season is the Fremantle Dockers hosting the Gold Coast Suns, which actually might be a really interesting game off the back of this round.
They're meant to be getting O'Sullivan and Franklin back and potentially Bowers and potentially Cuthbertson.
Yeah, okay.
I'm going to go Freo by 40. They will be absolutely furious about what happened on Saturday. So I'm going Freo by 40.
Chaos tip, I'm going to go Suns by 6.
Wow. I love how you said earlier, I need to redeem my tipping so you don't tip the Saints. But then since then, you've gone completely wild.
Yep. I'm all out of sorts after 2 weeks off.
My fault.
So listen to Gemma's tipping. It's probably more sensible than mine. Or, you know, chaos tip.
Chaos tipping is fun, though.
Yeah. You know, if you get it right, it's just ridiculous. It's not even possible.
Yeah.
Anyway, that is a wrap on our review of round 9 of the 2022 AFLW season. If you have enjoyed this delightful chat we've had today and would like to follow along with us on Twitter, you can find me at @Ro_Kel and also at @PlayOnRadioMelp. Gemma, what's your Twitter handle?
I'm at GL Bastiani. Come and find me.
She'll wave at you.
I do always wave. I was on the phone to my brother yesterday, and when I said goodbye to him, I waved. It wasn't a FaceTime. It was just a voice call.
Hi.
I literally waved.
We wave a lot on this recording too. Hi. We're doing it now. Well, that's it from us for now. Thanks for listening to Footy Actually, and we'll catch you next time.
Bye.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.